WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. She's the daughter of Muhammad Ali, but boxing used to be the furthest thing from Leila Ali's mind, until she was 18 and watched a match between two women, then decided to step into the ring herself. Now at the age of 24, Leila Ali is perhaps the top name in women's boxing. Her most publicized fight, which she won, was against Joe Frazier's daughter. Leila is the second youngest of Muhammad Ali's nine children. Her mother, Veronica, met Muhammad Ali in 1974, the year he beat Joe Frazier and George Foreman. Veronica became Ali's third wife. After their divorce, Leila stayed with her mother. Leila Ali has a new book called Reach, Finding Strength, Spirit, and Personal Power. I asked her how her name affected her ability to get started as a boxer.
There's no doubt that my name helped me in a positive way because, for one, just the story itself, before I even stepped into the ring, before anybody saw whether I could fight or not, just Muhammad Ali's child, whether I was a man or a woman, was a big story. So there was publicity right there. Then, also, you know, people are going to judge me. A lot of people are going to be harder on me because, for one, they expect me to, my first fight, you know, fight a world champion or something. And it didn't go that way, obviously, because I take my career and my manager took my career as a beginning fighter, not as Muhammad Ali's daughter, because no matter who I fight, they're always going to come in there ready to take my head off. It doesn't matter what my name is. And people always train to fight me harder because of who I am and because of the publicity they think they'll get if they beat me.
At what point after you decided you were interested in boxing did you tell your father about it?
Once I decided that I really wanted to do it and I was actually in the gym training, then, you know, word had pretty much gotten around because there's all different types of characters in the business and they're in the gym and people are talking. And my dad had already heard through someone else that I was training to fight. But I went to him myself and let him know that it was true and that I intended to box. And I wasn't asking him, I was just telling him, you know, yeah, it's true what you've been hearing, basically. And because I really wasn't going to tell anybody until I was ready to actually do it, because I didn't want anyone getting in my way and I just didn't want a whole lot, too much attention and pressure on me. So, but once I found out that he already knew, then I went on and confirmed it for him.
What was his reaction?
Well, I'm sure that I didn't get the initial reaction, because like I said, he already knew. So he was probably expecting me to come and speak to him, but pretty much he just got really quiet and he wanted to make sure that I knew how hard it was, because, you know, I think as most parents, when your child says they want to do something that to them may seem easy and you know differently, you know, he was just saying, well, what's going to happen when you get, you know, hit and you get dizzy, and or if you get knocked down or if you get knocked out or if you lose a fight? He's telling me all the negative things just in case I hadn't thought about them. And he knew I couldn't possibly imagine because it hadn't happened yet. So, and I just told him, you know, well, you did it. So many other people do it. I want to do it. And if you guys can do it, so can I. So I'm ready to deal with it. And that's my attitude towards life, period.
And what did your mother think when she found out that you were going to be boxing?
My mother has always been supportive of me. She's a spiritual person, and she believes that, you know, I'm following my path that's meant for me. So, but I think that, well, she did tell me that she was thinking, oh, God, not again, because she went through it with my father. But she didn't say that to me because she didn't want to affect, you know, how I felt or seem like she was being negative. So she kept that to herself. But she told me recently.
Now, you had said that your father knew that you couldn't imagine what it would be like when you were knocked out because you hadn't experienced it yet. And it was the kind of thing he wanted to protect you from. Have you been knocked out yet? And what is the experience like? What was surprising about it to you?
I haven't been knocked out. And a fighter can go through their whole career, many do, without ever getting knocked out. That was just one of the things that could happen. So it's not, have you been knocked out yet, you know, and you know, that's something that I don't think is going to happen. But I have been knocked down in the ring by a punch, and then basically, I mean, you don't feel it, you just are on the floor, and you have to get up, and it's a matter of how you deal with it after you get knocked down. Are you gonna panic? First of all, I wasn't hurt, you know, it was a flash knockdown, so I was able to get back up, and I still, you know, my mind was there and I was like, okay, well, usually when you get knocked down, the other person thinks, okay, I hurt this person, now it's time to jump on him. So I had to think what I was going to do, what my strategy was going to be in a matter of 8 seconds.
Now, for anyone who hasn't seen you or seen a photo of you, I should mention that you're very attractive. Do you worry about breaking a nose or having something happen to your face that would damage it?
No, but I think that even if I wasn't attractive, I wouldn't be worried about that. So that's just not the type of person I am. When I go out, when it's about looking good, then I want to look good. But when I'm in the ring, it's not about looking good. Now, as far as my nose getting broke, that would hurt. Of course, I don't want that to happen. But if it does happen and, you know, my nose gets messed up, then that's just something that's going to happen. And if it bothers me a whole lot, if I don't like the way that I look, then I'll get plastic surgery. But that's not something that I'm concerned about. You can't be concerned about that if you're going to fight. That I'd be in the wrong sport for that.
My guest is Leila Ali. She's the daughter of Muhammad Ali, and she's a pro boxer. She has a new memoir called Reach, Finding Strength, Spirit, and Personal Power. Now, your parents divorced when you were how old?
I was about 9.
Mm-hmm. So for the first 9 years of your life, you lived with your father, and then after that, you lived with your mother after the divorce. When you lived together as a family, describe the home where you lived.
Well, my house, I lived in a mansion, and I had housekeepers and cooks and nannies, and there was always a lot of people in and out, and it was pretty much open all the time. My father always had guests over, and, you know, it wasn't like a private household.
Did you like that?
No, I didn't like that growing up. You don't really feel very secure as a child, and at the time, I didn't know it. I wasn't like, whoa, I don't feel secure in here, you know, but now that I've gotten older, and I've, you know, realized from my behavior and, you know, how I started to become as I got older as a result of it and how it's affected me, I realized that I didn't like it and I wasn't comfortable.
When you say you weren't secure in that background, what about all the comings and goings and the staff and everything made you feel insecure? Because in some ways you have such a big infrastructure of people who are getting paid to take care of you.
Right, but at the same time, people who are getting paid to take care of you aren't going to take as good a care of you as people who love you and who are your family members like your mother and your father. And also, for a child, when you form a relationship with somebody, as in a nanny, and then that person leaves and gets fired, you have to think about what kind of effect that's going to have on a child every time you start a relationship with someone and then hear someone else to replace them. You know, that's not normal for a child growing up.
Was it a thrill to have celebrities around the house?
No, it wasn't a thrill because I think it's a thrill to people who aren't used to being around celebrities. That's all I knew. And my dad's the most famous man in the world. So, you know, any other celebrity came through was just another person to me. It's all about how the people around you act, how you perceive them as a child. They're just people.
When your parents divorced and you went to live with your mother, did your economic class change?
No, my mother, we lived in a smaller house, which I liked, and but we still lived in the same neighborhood. We were only a few blocks away.
Was there any, I know you must have been upset when your parents divorced, but was there any sense of relief getting out of the celebrity household because you went to live with your mother?
I can't remember. I mean, when I was that young, it wasn't, you know, my thoughts were not that organized, so.
Right.
You know, I don't think so. I think that I had no problem as a child, I didn't have a problem with my mom and dad divorcing. I wasn't upset. So I'm sure that there probably was some relief. It's like, oh, we're moving into a smaller house. I get to have a cat. You know what I mean? I don't have to have a nanny. You know, it's just stuff that kids want to have.
In your book, you write, I always had black friends, but they were other privileged kids. I had yet to discover the world of black L.A. How did you start to meet people your age who were outside the privileged world that you grew up in?
I think when I first started going to public school, because I just resisted private school, I didn't really like it. My mom tried different schools, and then finally she put me in public school, and I liked it, third grade. And, you know, in private school, they can filter who goes there. Only certain people with, you know, privileged people can afford to go there. So when I went to public school, there was just all different types of people and different races, which was good.
You got into trouble as a teenager. What were the things you did that got you into trouble?
When I was growing up, I started to become very rebellious. I was trying to find myself and just wanted to be around real people. And a lot of times I'd wander off too far, to the other extreme and just end up around people who weren't going anywhere in life. And, you know, I was just rebellious. Like I said, I started being disrespectful to my mother. I got at that age where you don't want to really listen to your parents anymore. And everything with me was just magnified, though. You know, I started stealing her car. I was with some girls that shoplifted. I was with them and shoplifted along with them. I had money in my pocket, but I did it, you know, like a lot of kids do. They just don't get caught. But and I got caught for it, and then I got put on in the system, probation system, you know, in the court system, basically. And from there on, you know, I wasn't really doing that good in school, but now I had a judge looking at me, watching me. So, you know, from there on, it just got worse and worse. And then I got to a certain point where I ended up in juvenile hall. And once I got there, that's when my head, you know, the light bulb came on. And I said, okay, you know, I'm going down the wrong road. Because I always had what it took to be successful. I always had that drive. I always wanted you know, a lot for myself. I just was going in the wrong direction trying to get it.
Well, and, what made you realize that in juvenile hall?
Well, first of all, when you get locked up, that's not going to make you very happy. To turn around and see my mom crying as they're taking me out the courtroom, that opened my eyes, you know, how much my mom loved me and how I wasn't in control anymore. And that's all I ever wanted, was to be in control of my own life. And then here it is, you know, getting taken away from me. Then once I got in juvenile hall to the actual facility, just to see the types of people that were there that didn't really have much common sense and weren't as smart as me. I'm talking about, you know, didn't have loving parents, didn't have the support that I had, you know. So I'm not saying that they belong there because of it, but I could understand them being there more but than me. It was just unnecessary.
What did the last name of Ali mean in juvenile hall? Did people... want to take you on because of that name? You know, like pick a fight with
you. I didn't have any problems in juvenile hall with the girls because, for one, I'm a big, strong girl, okay? Most of my problems came when I was younger or when there'd be five people against one, you know, or something like that. But when I got into juvenile hall, for one, I used my mom's last name, which was Anderson, because she was remarried, because I didn't want to go in there as Layla Ali, not because I was just embarrassed, basically. And, it did get around, because all it takes is one person who went to school with you that knew you, and then they pass it around. So people knew who I was, but no one messed with me. You know, I'm not the type of person you just look at and want to mess with. I'm a big, strong girl, and I don't have the type of personality that you would just want to mess with me. So I didn't have any problems.
So when you got out of juvenile hall, that's when you got into the business of nails. You worked as a manicurist and then started your own nail salon. Did it seem like that was going to be a good direction for you? Were you happy with that work?
It was a good direction for me while I was in college. I never once wanted to be a manicurist all my life. I wanted to go to school full time, and I wanted to live on my own. I wanted to support myself. I said, okay, how am I going to be able to do that working for $6.95 an hour? I can't. So therefore, I decided, and I also didn't want to have to answer to a boss, because I've always been a leader. I've always been the type of person who's an entrepreneur, and I'm better than working a job and just given, you know, some rules to have to follow. I like to make the rules. So I decided to go to school for nails because I figured I could make money at. I had a high-end nail salon. I didn't have a little walk-in salon, $6 manicure. That's not the type of salon that I had. Just for anybody who, you know, is picturing one of those little walk-in places where you go and it's like, I'll do your nails for $5. It wasn't like that. So I made very good money doing nails, and, you know, I had a certain type of clientele, and I was able to go to school full-time and live on my own and do everything that I wanted to do. So that's what it was all about.
My guest is boxer Layla Ali. She has a new book called Reach. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Layla Ali. She's written a new memoir called Reach, Finding Strength, Spirit, and Personal Power. Do you see your body differently now that you're a boxer and you have to really be in top form all the time?
My body is definitely different. It looks different and it feels different. And, you know, more I'm an athlete now, so everything that I'm conscious of what I'm eating, what I'm putting in my body, and I understand that you are what you eat, literally.
What's your diet like now?
You really want to know?
Sure.
My diet pretty much consists of lots of vitamins, 40 vitamins a day, protein shakes, ultra fuel, which is a carbohydrate that, you know, gives your body energy, you know, replenishes your body after you work out. You know, lots of chicken and fish and vegetables, brown, white, rice, wheat, pasta, Ezekiel bread, you know, just lots of water. Pretty much that's it.
And you feel good?
I feel great. I mean, I'm in top shape, and it's going to get better. You know, there's even more that I can do, but I leave that up to my strength and conditioning coach to deal with.
Has the experience of boxing change your ideas about what the difference is between men and women, or what it means to be masculine or to be feminine?
No, and I think that that's why those are the hardest questions for me, because I've never had thoughts about what it is to be masculine and feminine. I've never had thoughts of what the difference between a man and a woman is when it comes to sports, because I don't limit myself and I don't pay attention to the other limits that people put on me. So it never was a concern to me, and it still isn't. It's like, I'm a woman and I box, and I definitely, a lot of women feel like they have something to prove. I'm talking about female fighters. They feel like they have something to prove, and they always are so concerned about people taking them seriously, and it's like, I can't make people take me seriously. You're either going to watch me and like what you see, or you're not. You know, I think that if you're doing a good job in the ring, people will forget that they're watching a woman and just start paying attention to the actual fight itself. So, you know, it might just because of my age, that I'm 24 and I wasn't really around those times, you know, when it was different for women. So, you know, that's just how I feel. You know, I've never set limits for myself.
What makes you happy about boxing?
I love being in the ring. Okay. I love when you work with your trainers and they're saying, this is what you have to do. And they're explaining a certain technique to you and you just can't get it. And when you actually get in there and do it for the first time, it feels so good. And then from there, it's like, well, why can't I do this before? I think it's the same as anything that somebody's working at and trying to get better at, whether it's being a rider, whether it's being, you know, a teacher, a race car driver. If you have something that you love to do and you can actually get in there and you spent time, so many hours, and so you're so dedicated to it, and then you see yourself getting better and you feel the difference and you see the difference, it just makes you feel good. So, and of course, then specifically to what I do, winning feels good, you know, being on top. And also, you know, there's a certain pride within me, obviously, and I'm very proud of the fact of who my father is, because when it comes to boxing, I know it's in my blood. I know I have an advantage, and I take it very seriously. And, you know, it's like I take very good care of my body, and I put in the work that I need to put in, because I feel like I need to be better than everybody else because I have an advantage. So I have to be on top. And you know, there's just a certain, I just have a lot of drive when it comes to boxing. So to be in there and to actually get in the ring and do it, it just feels great.
One of the things your father did was come up with these great rhymes and boasts that really caught everybody's imagination. Could you ever see yourself doing something like that, or would that be really out of character for you?
It would definitely be out of character, because for one, I don't do it, and for two, I'm not a follower. So there's nothing that my father has ever done that I just want to do just because he did it. You know, if it comes to me naturally, which certain things do, sometimes I'll start talking a lot and I'll just be on a roll. That's because that's just me. But I would never, like, purposely. I've had people come to me and, oh, look, I wrote this rhyme for you. You know, I want you to say this. It sounds like your dad. And I'm like, get out of here, man. You know what I mean? Because it's not me, you know, and it could be a good rhyme and it could be great and it can make a lot of people happy and a lot of people laugh. Like, a lot of people want me to get in the ring and do the rope-a-dope, or get in the ring and shuffle my feet, do the shuffle like my dad did. It was like, that was a big thing. When you fight Jackie Frazier, you got to do the shuffle. Oh my God, that'd be so great. And it's like, first of all, it would take me so much practice to try to do it. And then to actually do it well, like he did, would take so much practice. And then to look stupid doing it, the risk of that, I was like, no, I'm going to focus on fighting well. You know what I mean? All that is extra.
Well, Leila Ali, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Leila Ali has a new book called Reach, Finding Strength, Spirit, and Personal Power. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.